Boy, I was not expecting these kind of questions.
Yeah,
I didn't
sorry.
know there was going to be math involved. I'd say probably around 500, 550.
That's about right. Peyton came up with that question, and I was like, I don't know. So she's like, we'll ask it and see if he knows. So.
You are listening to CORE, powered by and for the Holt family of companies. Let's dig in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of CORE. I'm your host, Peyton, and this is episode 3, titled, How Much Do They Really Know? Today is September 28th, and I have some fabulous guests with me. I have a ton of people here that are ready to start the party. I have Eric Williamson, Paul Sinogi, John Johnson, Dakota Schelling, Justin Comer, and Grant Phillips. If you're new here, to recap, we have started an internal podcast to learn a little bit more about the inner workings of our company and to help understand our core values. So let's get into our podcast. Our podcast is structured around our core values, and today this episode focuses on continuous improvement through teamwork. The designated leaders of our company are expected to head improvement, but that is impossible unless they're plugged into what's going on around the department and the company. While oftentimes led by management and executives, ideas for improvement are derived from issues communicated to management by employees. So a lack of communication from employee to manager or manager to employee will stall improvement. In a field that is constantly changing from our products to the market to the technology available, it is imperative not only for company growth, but also for survival. Our ability to continuously improve through teamwork allows us to be profitable, better serve our customers, be safer, and the list goes on. Just like all of our core values, continuous improvement through teamwork is intertwined with each other core value. So today we're going to find out how much a few of our execs know about the roles within their divisions. I would go as far as to say, as Eric, Paul, and John, you guys are definitely in my top 8 favorite execs. Before we dig in.
Thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome, Eric. Before we dig in, let's get to know today's guests.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Paul Sinogi. I'm the executive vice president for the engine division. I've been with the company for 30 years this July 1st. So it's been 30 great years. The different positions I've had here at Holt, I started off in 1993 as a utility warehouseman in Stockton, California, when it was Holt Brothers. I then became a service coordinator. I was a service advisor. I became a service supervisor, an assistant service manager, general service manager, and now I'm the vice president of the engine division.
So what you're telling me is Holt is in your blood.
Holt is in my blood. And in all honesty, I started with Holt as a, in my mind, a gap job for me to finish college, get through college, and move on with the career I thought I was going to have. And 30 years later, I'm glad it didn't work out the way I originally planned.
All right, Paul. So who did you invite on the podcast today?
Mr. Justin Comer, who is currently the TC of the power system side of the engine division.
Fabulous. Do you have any fun stories or anything with Justin?
Fun stories with Justin.
Or any experience that you've had with him?
So what am I allowed to say online? So I think one of the cool experiences, and we talk about it on occasion, is if I'm not mistaken, when we interviewed him, his parents were in the room. So he was one of our original Think Big employees. He was coming out of high school. He was 17 years old, and he obviously he's done a fabulous job for us. So that was that experience was kind of fun. And we joke about it from time to time. And over the years, he's obviously developed well. He's progressed well and has been very successful for us and our customers.
That is so awesome. All right, Justin, we're going to kick it over to you, and I'd like to hear your introduction.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm Justin Comer. I'm the Power Systems TC for the engine division. I've been with Holt for about 13 years now. Went through Think Big program to start. Journeyed out, was in the field for several years, and coming up on 2 years as technical communicator.
Amazing. And do you have any fun stories with Paul?
I have a lot of fun stories with Paul. Paul has been a part of my entire career here. He interviewed me, as he mentioned before, and he's been a part of every single promotion I've had here. A big part of my training and my growth. And he's a good friend.
All right, Eric, we're going to kick it over to you and Dakota. So Dakota is joining us from Albany, Oregon. He's actually in his truck as a field tech. So let's hear from Eric first, and then we'll hop on to Dakota.
Thank you, Peyton. Eric Williamson, I have the privilege of overseeing Holt Ag Solutions as the vice president. Holt Ag Solutions is basically the ag division for Holt of California. I've been here 37 years. I started as an apprentice shop technician here in Pleasant Grove, moved over to the main shop for a couple years, was in a field service truck for about 12 years, became the technical communicator, service manager here in Pleasant Grove, and then general service manager, and then took over the ag division. And then I've been vice president of the ag division since, I think, about 2015. So long career here. Great place to work.
All right, Dakota.
I'm Dakota. I work out of the Albany, Oregon location. So I've been servicing, I guess, the same store for 5 years now.
Awesome. Dakota, do you have any experiences with Eric that you'd like to share?
I guess initially when he came up into Oregon, we're trying to make, you know, our presence known as, like, you know, a dealer that cares. And we had a customer up in Molalla, which is an hour and a half away from here. And we had a machine that ended up having a bad catalyst in it. And it was constantly going into a D-rate. And so we were out there every day. And Eric was actually, you know, he was in his dress shoes and shirt was up on the combine, you know, getting dirty with the rest of us. So that was pretty cool. So.
Awesome. Thanks, Dakota. Okay, John, we're going to kick it over to you.
Good morning, Peyton. John Johnson, Cat Rental Store Vice President. Got hired in June of 2001 here at Holt as the General Manager of Cat Rental Store. It's one of the divisions here at Holt, California.
Awesome. And who do you have here with you today?
I have Grant Phillips with us, coordinator out of our Fruit Ridge store. He's been with us for a few years, does a really good job out of the Fruit Ridge store. And I see him having a really long career here at Holt if he wants to.
Awesome. That's awesome. All right, Grant, last one.
Hi, good morning, Peyton, John. My name's Grant Phillips. I've been here for a little over 2 years now and working as a rental coordinator in the Fruit Ridge branch. Been there my entire time here so far. It's been a really great learning experience so far. Every day there's a new challenge. It's always fun to hear stories about the careers that people have had here. Well, it's pretty tough looking around seeing, you know, almost 100 years of experience at this company in this room and not wanting to pursue that. So it's a good thing to look forward to.
That's awesome. All right. Awesome. So now that we are a tad more familiar with each other, let's get started. Welcome to round one of Test That Exec. Working in teams is far more efficient when team members have some familiarity with the strengths of their partners. Today, we're going to test the knowledge of our three executives. Justin, Dakota, and Grant were asked to come up with a list of questions about their roles in the company to ask their respective executive. So let's dig in. We are going to put Paul and Justin in the hot seat first. All right, before we put Paul in the hot seat, I just want to let all of you know that these execs have never heard these questions or seen these questions before, so this is going to be a surprise to them as much as you.
How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. How are you, Justin?
I'm good. So traditionally, Engine Division has had one TC. Recently, we were able to divide that role and add a second with Emmanuel Suarez. Do you know how we have divided the responsibilities between myself and Emmanuel?
Well, let's take a step back and add. The engine division has always had two TCs. Power systems division had one when the two departments were joined under one. They brought two TCs because truck side always had a TC. So that always existed. So we've always had two TCs. My understanding, the way it's split up, is your position being on the power side, you oversee the power systems, the generators, and and what goes on in that realm, along with the switchgear and everything that evolves with that. Emmanuel's role is truck site, industrial engines, the nut harvesting business that we're in, and any of the pumps and stuff like that. So that's kind of what's under his role. And then I think there's a little bit of overlap with the both of you guys as a backup.
Yes, there is. That is correct. How do you see our roles continuing to develop in the future? Do you see us continuing to divide our responsibilities in the same way we do? Do you see any cross training, more of a division north versus south, or keeping it the way it is? And if so, why?
So our roles, meaning the two TCs.
Yes, correct.
Well, I definitely don't want it to ever, the perspective to ever be north versus the south, right? Want us to be one team as a whole. You know, that we do have territories, so we refer to them as north and south many times, but definitely not versus, but on the same team. You know, over the years, we've always promoted and stressed cross-training. I think it adds flexibility. It gives us more options. We've done that with our technicians. I don't see why we wouldn't do that with our TCs as well. You guys do specialize and have a great amount of knowledge in certain areas, and being able to expand that in other areas to give us more flexibility as we do with our technicians, I think that's a must. There's way too many things going on out there to have or rely on just one person.
Perfect. Well, speaking of training and developing, do you know what training I have received in my career at Holt and what training I've received now that I've become TC?
I believe originally you were on the path of a EPG analyst. So you went through CP1, CP2, you finished CP3, you did ATS training, which is automatic transfer switch training. I believe you've done switchgear training and paralleling. If I'm not mistaken, you're in line to go to gas training here soon.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, along with a few other of our technicians.
Yes.
Obviously, you've had arc flash training. That's a requirement for us. But most of your training up to date, I believe, has been around the power systems industry as a whole.
I think you're looking at my notes because you listed them pretty much in the order I have written down. So good on you. Good on you. What training would you like to see me pursue in the future to help me better the technicians?
So I think the area that you probably have had the least exposure would be the gas part of it, the gas industry. I know you've had some exposure, but not as much as the other areas. So seeing and noticing that you're going to gas training, I think that's great, right? I think it's gas 1 you're going to.
Correct.
So I would follow that up with gas 2 and continue going with that. That's an important part of our industry, and your support in that would be definitely needed.
Do you know what the 3 most used websites I use to help our customers and technicians?
3 most used websites to help. SysWeb.
Bingo.
ServiceLink, maybe. I don't know how much you get into the work order management side to help or not. I wouldn't think so.
Do we need a phone?
No, we might need a phone to friend. So you deal a lot with our cat reps as well. So you
correct.
Submit DSNs. I would imagine that you're on that as well.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I'm on that quite a bit.
So that's 2.
That's well, close. That though I use, I submit DSNs quite often. I would not say that's one of my most used.
Okay.
DSN is what I use when I can't find the answers myself. And I need to phone a friend and ask for help. SysWeb obviously is king. That's what we use for a lot of our industry. When I need to dig a little deeper or go a little further back in the history books, PowerNet is my second best friend. And then the biggest one I use is DPSS, which is Dealer Product Support Search. It compiles information from SysWeb, from SIMS, from DSNs, and you can search keywords and pull up similar people that have the same problems and read through their solutions and see if that applies to what you're working on.
Beautiful. Why do you have a smile on your face?
I don't know.
Okay, just wondering.
Just happy to see you, Paul. In your opinion, Paul, based on what you've seen, what was the most substantial job that I was involved with as TC so far?
The most substantial job. Well, you know, we've had some upgrades at some of our gas customer sites. We've had a lot of rebuilds that we normally don't see. Some of these 3520s, the C175 at Cache Creek. So it'd be a shot in the dark of what you consider the most.
I was just more curious what you thought.
Maybe the control upgrades up at Energy 2001, Nathan's.
It's project. Still a work in progress. The gear is still in our shop. That is a big job. I'm looking forward to the completion of that. That will be a lot of fun. That should be a good learning experience for many of our technicians. I'm excited for that.
So is that an acceptable answer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, just checking.
Absolutely. The couple that I had written down, you actually mentioned Cache Creek, that we had a major engine failure, and it took a whole village to get that put back together. And I think we did very well on that. So with that, do you happen to know anything about a recent job that myself, sales and service, as well as other CAT dealerships and vendors just worked together to complete a never before done project for a customer?
This was on the re-rent for Rich Lund.
Correct.
The gas unit.
Yes.
I think we were out there at least a few weeks to try to get this going for the customer.
Absolutely.
We had some control problems. We thought we had some engine problems. And if I'm not mistaken, it took the team as a whole to move forward with this, including flying out some engineers to try to get this situated. Is that correct?
That is correct. I have actually never been more proud of our team than I was at the completion of this project. We were taking a product that we're not familiar with, using a control system we're not familiar with, software we're not familiar with, a gas system that we're not familiar with, and trying to do with it what no other dealer has yet done.
And the customer is trying to accomplish something that hasn't been done, correct?
Correct. Correct. It was a very special situation. We had to learn a lot on the fly. And it was very, very cool to see all teams come together. Rich Lund was out there 5 or 6 times on site. What do you need? What can I help with? He got us in contact with anybody and everybody we needed. He flew the engineers out. Aaron Brady, John Mott were both out there helping us along. Technicians worked tirelessly for a couple weeks there. And then as well as the dispatchers, as this job took longer than we had anticipated, schedules had to change. And Bruce, Anthony, and Jamie Ornsby all worked very, very hard to adjust the schedule kind of constantly in a fluid motion to keep their customers happy and free up these technicians to help finish this job. It took a whole village, and we all banded together, and I'm very, very proud of the teamwork that came out of this project.
I just want to capture that clip of what you just said and have it forever and just play it over and over. It's just music to my ears, right? And share that, actually. Make sure that the rest of our team hear that. That's important.
Absolutely.
Everything you just said, that was my understanding of what happened. The service manager, Jonathan Warner, was out there as well.
Correct.
We had some, I know Rich and Jonathan had some training that they had to forego so that they could make sure they go out there to help push this project forward. The technicians that were out there, they threw everything that they had at it to move forward. And like you mentioned, we would not have been successful had not everybody been involved and contributed to it. And for me, that is just a great representation of who we are as a division, who we are as a company as a whole. And it speaks to why being here for me 30 years has been a positive experience. So what you just said, I thought was fabulous. Thank you.
I couldn't agree with you more. Final question for you. What role do I play in technician safety?
Very important role. I don't believe your role is any more or any less than any other member of our team. Safety falls equally on all of our shoulders. It's a core value of ours. It's something that we need to promote, push, and practice daily. It should be a reminder for all of us, and it's important, right? Not for our metrics, not for our numbers, but as Ken likes to say, making sure all of you guys go home safe every day to your families. You know, that's important. So your role, just like everybody else's, is to promote it, practice it, push it, share it, live it, and be actively engaged in it. So it sets that tone and that representation and example for everybody, and especially new employees who come in. And I think that's a big key, is when we get new employees, we don't want them to believe or think that it's a check the box. It may have been that way where they came from, but we want them to know that it is important and front and center for us here.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Any interaction I believe you have with a technician should have a tone of safety in it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I agree. And so just to grow on what you said, I do test all the gloves, as well as I provide all the safety electrical PPE, whether it be the gloves, yellow matting we use for insulation, the clamps for those. I calibrate all the safety test equipment as well, our Fluke meters, our Megers, anything and everything we use for electrical equipment, as well as our other specialty equipment, gas analyzers. I'm responsible for making sure all the equipment that we use to test our engines and generators is certified, calibrated, and safe to use. And then, like you said, in the shop and safety meeting and in the field, I'm a big trainer when it comes to safety and teaching people the correct and safe way of doing things.
I have a question for him. Is that allowed?
That's allowed.
All right.
Uh-oh.
My turn. So, Mr. Comer, I have a question for you.
Okay, ask away.
I've had the privilege of watching you develop and grow over the years, over the last 13 years. I've seen your path. I've seen your challenges, your successes. And as, again, it's been a privilege for me to see it and watch it and be a part of it. And I believe that you have some good insight and that maybe you can provide some good tips or advice for those coming after you, whether they're Think Big employees, whether they're just hired, off the streets. What tips, what advice would you give new employees coming in that you think may help them succeed here at Holt?
I would say enjoy it. We have a family here, and it's not just one of those things we say. It's not just a PR phrase. We are a family. Like you said, you've watched me grow. I have friends here, and my children and their children are growing up together. We are a team here. We are a family. And there's so much experience in the office, in the shop, in the field. We have such good tenure. There's nobody here from the top or bottom that can't teach you something. So learn everything you can, enjoy every minute. And I would also say to expand on the family thing, I tried to get out of California and I did not enjoy it. I missed my family here at Holt, and it was exactly 1 month from my start date at the new company out of state that I called you, Paul, begging to come home. And you said, when can you be here? And I would encourage everybody to enjoy every moment you got and maybe just appreciate what we have, because this is something special, what we have here at Holt. We are a family, and I truly believe that.
All right, now we are going to put Eric in the hot seat and allow Dakota to ask him some questions. Again, Dakota is from Albany, Oregon, so he is joining us today on Zoom. You can take it away, Dakota. Welcome in.
Okay. So California and Oregon, two very different markets. How do you handle kind of the separate policies and stuff in Oregon and in California? You know, there's different truck regulations. There's the Holt Care and Holt Care Plus. You know, there's a lot of differences. You know, and for instance, like it seems like there's a lot more small repairs in Oregon and a lot larger repairs in California too. You know, there's a lot of big breakdowns. So it just seems like there's a lot of difference in those two markets.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of difference between the crops that are done in Oregon. I mean, you guys are primarily grass seed and grass hay. And then California, of course, it's, you know, the big crop down here, especially for combines, is rice. And yeah, they're on the two ends of the spectrum of wear on a machine. So yeah, managing the repairs, it just, you know, you start gearing your dealership, your location to take care of the local customers. That's why we kind of operate on that branch concept. And As far as regulations go, yeah, the ones in Oregon, there are different than California. And I think the practice we usually take is whichever one is the most extreme, we kind of follow that in both places just to make sure we're, you know, taking care of the customers and, you know, making sure you guys are safe and efficient.
Okay. That actually makes a lot of sense because that explains kind of like, because we follow a lot of, Oregon's a little more lax. We follow a lot of the California stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes it's easier to just pick a rule and go with it.
Right. Okay. So this one would be like for my job, how do I quote hours for repair?
So you're one of a very efficient technician. So you're probably going to give us hours and then we'll probably add some to it. So everyone else can meet that same goal.
Yeah.
But you guys are the ones who are actually, you know, you're looking at the equipment, you're knowing what's got to come off and come back on. And so that's the best way to do it.
Well, and the nice part is now with Tech Connect using their Tech Ready program, and then with Kloss having CDS, and then they have the breakdown of like component replacements, you know, I can usually take that and add an hour, take an hour away, kind of go off. Well, with Kloss, I can get actually really close to those hours, but
that Tech Ready feature, the newer one, does make it a little, at least, you know, the expectations. Whether we can meet them is a different subject, but at least you know the target.
Yeah, I had one that I was really, really curious how they, because it was bushings underneath the cab, and they said 4 hours, and I'm like, man, they must have had the tool, because I had to actually lift the cab off, take the wishbone out, and press the bushings out, and it was more like 10 hours for me, and I want to know the guy who did it in four, so...
Yeah, that's always been the magic behind that. And I've seen where they shoot service manuals and stuff at some of the manufacturers, and they have a very nice, clean shop. They have everything laid out, ready to go, and they're probably on their third or fourth attempt to do that repair, and then they figure out, okay, everyone else should be able to do that. So,
what is the only product that I don't typically work on?
The only product you don't typically work on. Let's see, you're pretty diverse. I know you work on sprayers. I know you work on combines. You probably don't work on as many balers. It's probably the least amount.
I haven't touched a baler in about 3 years. So okay. since Holt's taken over. So.
All right. Yeah, well, that's a very specialized, everything we do is getting so specialized. It's hard to be that jack of all trades anymore. And so we kind of find out what guys, tech or gals, are better equipped to work on, and kind of focus the training there.
I don't like anybody struggling. And I've seen, you know, like with the baler guys now, that, you know, they're out late and I'm out late on combines, but I feel like I want to help out. So it's not like I miss balers, but I'd be willing to help out. So
no, I know you would. You're always willing to chip in, and we'll get, those guys are just getting, I see it as they're getting a lot of good experience, and they're going to be better for it.
Oh, I know they are. They can out-diagnose me on a baler. You put me on a knotter, I'll be out there for 6 hours, and it probably would have taken them 30 minutes, but.
Yeah. That's a very, very complex piece of equipment.
Yeah. How many machines do I typically, during the busy time of year, go to in a day? Like just kind of an average, would you think? Oh.
So like during harvest?
Yeah, during harvest.
An average a day, I want to probably say somewhere around 5 would be my guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I get about too. I wasn't sure. Whose equipment do I work on the most?
Let's see. It's probably a toss up between Setnikers and Denver Pugh.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I would say Setnikers more.
Okay.
But definitely a toss up.
Yeah. I was riding around with David the other day, and he was commenting on how much they like you working on their equipment. So I thought I'd pass that along.
They treat me well. About how many visits do I make to customers annually?
Oh, annually? Boy, I was not expecting these kind of questions.
Yeah, sorry.
I didn't know there was going to be math involved. let's see. I'll go 260 days a year. Quarter of the time, you're going five times a day. I'd say probably around 500, 550.
Yeah, that's about right. Peyton came up with that question, and I was like, I don't know. So she's like, we'll ask it and see if he knows. So.
Okay. Yeah, let's challenge Eric as much as possible. Yeah.
Well, I say we just have an Ask Peyton podcast, mini podcast one of these times, and everyone she's been suggesting these to, we'll throw them back at her.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds terrifying.
See if you can remember.
We'll put Peyton in the hot seat.
What equipment do I specialize in?
I'm going to say it's combines.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say toss up between combines and Fendt wheeled tractors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So out of that 550, how many of those are combines and how many of those are Fendts? I'll throw a question back at you.
So if I were to break up, so it's probably Fendt tractors is probably more of the work order load. But combines take up probably about the same amount of time, but with less work orders. So, yeah. Those warranty work orders, man. What is that? Oh, what is the average amount of rain we get each year? How does heavy rainfall affect our crop management?
Now we're asking weather questions. Okay.
This is your ag knowledge, Eric. Yeah. Into play right
so
now.
I know it's more rain than we get in California, except maybe last year might have been a toss-up. But I want to say in the 40s, the inches of rain in Albany. And I know like this year, it was a very wet winter, and so everything got behind. And then April, the rain in Oregon just shut off, right? And then it didn't rain until the crop got ready to harvest, so it actually impacted it extremely this year. In fact, it was one of the tougher combining years we've had, trying to, with the straw being so brittle and plugging the machine. And then a couple years ago, it was so rain, it's just, I tell you, that crop up there is so much more variable than any of the crops we have here in California. I have never experienced a crop like grass seed.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's hard to work it on sometimes. It's setting machines and stuff like that can get real finicky.
Yeah, that's a good word. Fun.
Yeah.
I like
that. Oh, yeah. And then this year, because it rained so much that they couldn't get the sprayers out onto the field to fertilize. And then when it stopped raining and there was no time to fertilize, then it just didn't rain at all. So our yields were just like, I mean, you were looking at 185 pounds an acre on a field that last year was putting out 2,000 pounds an acre. So
I remember we were going 2 weeks behind till 2 weeks ahead of schedule, almost overnight. Yeah, very challenging year.
It was nuts.
But you guys all rose to the occasion.
Yeah. Well, like I said, fun, usually fun. What is the difference in Lexions in Oregon versus California?
The difference between the combines in California and Oregon?
Yeah.
So all the combines we sell in California are on tracks. They also have spike teeth for separating the rice, and they're all rice configurations, rotors. So they're either class 8 or 9, pretty common. Oregon, we do sell some rotary machines on tires, 86, 8700s. And then we sell actually more straw walkers now. So a little different separation system. But everything's on tires with two-wheel drive axles. So,
yeah. Do you think you'll ever see walker machines in rice crop? Do you think there's any reason for it? No.
No, it's so much. That's just a lot tougher crop to thresh, and so the rotors do a lot more separating in California for the rice, whereas in the grass seed you're pretty much trying to just get it through the machine and out. You're not so much separating, you're just kind of cleaning more.
That's all I got.
Well, those are all good questions, Dakota. A lot of good thought. Now can I flip it and ask you probably a couple?
Yeah.
Well, I'll ask you one. So you were somewhat recruited, and so you were coming out of school in Montana, and you came to work. It wasn't Holt, but it was the ag dealer. So what attracted you to them? And then how can I use that to attract more technicians to all of our locations?
I like the idea of agriculture, but honestly, I just like working with my hands. In Oregon, I think it's really easy to recruit for. I know maybe you disagree, but I mean, you can tell somebody that from you in the same 4-hour trip, you can go from the coast to the rainforest, to the valley, to the mountains, and then into the desert. And that's all in a 4-hour drive. You know, it's a super cool experience. You can be on the beach. You can be, that's what brought me out here and just wanting to do something on my own. So, you know, if you look for people who, desire independence, I think that's kind of, I guess that would help you in the recruiting process.
All right. Well, thank you, Dakota.
Thanks, Dakota.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Peyton.
All right. So now we're going to switch it up and move into the Cat Rental Store with John Johnson and Grant Phillips.
All right. Well, morning, John.
Good morning.
All right. You're pretty well tapped into the rental store. I will say that. Every time I see you, you're pretty dialed in on what's going on. So I guess most of my questions are going to be about the actual duties of a coordinator and kind of what we have to do on the daily. So start off with, we are supposed to accomplish daily tasks every day as a rental coordinator. I'm curious if you know what most or all of those are.
Well, I know what most of them are. And I know what my expectations are versus what really happens inside the store. Number one is answer the telephone. And we need to answer that phone so we can take the deals and make stuff happen. We have to do our invoicing every day. We have to do reservations. We have to do shippers, pre-shippers. We have to collect on cash accounts and invoice those out. Watch what's going on in the yard. Dispatch a one ton. Deal with all the sales rep phone calls. Deal with re-rents. Deal with outside haulers. Deal with dispatch and a lot of other things. There's a lot of tasks that go on every day. It's fast-paced, and it can be fun, and it can be arduous at times as well.
Well, I couldn't have put it better. That's, like I said, I know you're pretty dialed in. So this will be, we're starting off with the T-ball questions and we'll dig into the more procedural ones here. So, I guess when all these sales reps and customers are calling in and we are so heavily reservation based where it can come down to the seconds on who has lead res for equipment, what are the three key pieces of information that you need to put in a reservation?
Well, first of all, I hate reservations, but it's a necessary evil with all the sales reps from the different divisions in the shared fleet that we have. Mm-hmm. So you need to have a customer name. You need to have a start date.
Yep.
And an end date or a start date and a rental rate, a phone number. I'm not sure exactly what you need to put a reservation in, quite honestly. But a customer, a piece of equipment, and a start date would be three things that I would think I would need.
Yep, absolutely. Those are the three key pieces. You need to know who wants it, what they want, and of course, when they want it.
Mm-hmm.
Details can always follow up after that. But
and how do you deal with those fake reservations?
Well, you got to call on people and make sure that they actually need the equipment. And like I said, you know, it's reservations are the necessary evil. We deal with a lot of gray area as coordinators. And so at the end of the day, we need to make the better business decision. You know, just because somebody says that they need equipment, you got to call on them and make sure that they actually are needing it or they have a unit locked down because things change by the minute. So it's always tough to deal with when you're looking for a wheel loader and there's 30 reservations in front of you. How many of those are actually needed? So when a customer calls in, we always want to make sure that if it's not something that we are familiar with, like not a customer that we're normally accustomed to dealing with, we want to make sure that they actually know what they're renting. Because some customers will call in saying they need a wheel loader, and they need it now, they need it tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Turns out that what they thought was a wheel loader was actually a skid steer. So there's so many different names for pieces of equipment that a telehandler can be it can be a forklift to some people. It can be a grade all to some, an extension lift. It can be, you know, the thing that can lift with forks very high up. So it's kind of our job to take in all that information and then to put in a reservation based on what the customer actually needs. So speaking of when customers call in, we like to deal with customers that are set up on active accounts, active credit lines, with insurance on file. But we always want to make sure we take care of as many customers as possible. So when a person who's just working in their backyard wants to rent an excavator, we have certain cash guidelines that are set up. And if they want a certain size excavator, do you know the largest excavator that we can rent to somebody on a cash account, John?
Yes, I do. But let's go back with hesitation. We are a commercial-based business looking for commercial-based accounts. Mm-hmm. We spend so much time on these cash accounts that it is ridiculous. Trying to rent to them, trying to collect the money, trying to process the money. It's almost a waste of time. So we need to build this business on commercial terms with contractors who have insurance on file and who have operators that know more about what they're doing than less. So we have come out and modified the cash rentals again at Cat Rental after several reps broke the spirit of the deal and went around the policies that we had in place. And so we actually put models in place as the largest excavator you can rent. And I'm going to go with a 306.
Yes, sir.
Was I right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Baby. There we go. Daryl Waite helps me with this because we've had so many games and so many things damaged, and they're big. And the bigger the gear, the bigger the bill, and the customers don't understand.
Yeah, that is. It's tough. People really don't understand just how much some of this equipment costs, not only to run, but to replace parts on. So we want to make sure that people know what they're getting. So, you know, all these deals that we're handling every day, there's so many different areas that Cat Rental Store services, all the way from Yuba down to Merced. And sometimes the deal moves from where the sales rep originally think that it's going to your store's territory. So when writing up equipment to certain stores, you might end up putting it on the wrong store's tag, and you want to make sure that the store gets paid for their area. So if I put something on a contract on the wrong store's territory, what's the process to remedy that?
I would say write a new tag. But let me add, all we really care about is that we get the proper contract to the proper customer at the right rental rates, delivered on time safely, because it all comes to Cat Rental, which all goes to Holt, California. So I know the stores sometimes want the credit, but we really need it, a proper rental agreement for a happy customer. And unfortunately, we rent way more than Merced to Yuba City. We have just as much south and west to the ocean and north to the Oregon border, almost as we have on rent in our territory. So it really has become challenging. We have store lines for which stores get which contracts and service areas, but you're right, it's really hard to keep track because Matt Parsons up in Roseville will call in a deal for Fireball regularly, and which is south of Merced. And who's tag and who's the customer and who's the rep and who do I call? It gets really challenging at times. Yeah,
it does. There's a large diversity that we deal with as coordinators. And I will say that probably about 80% of my day is spent sitting on a phone, which is dealing with other coordinators, sales reps, customers, people calling in for parts or just general questions about Caterpillar. And every Monday morning, we get a report of how many calls we had that week. So summer being our busiest time, do you know kind of a general average for the phone queue that each coordinator is generally around if there's a good, you know, calls that week?
So I do look at that report every Monday.
Oh, no.
You are one of the highest volume people in the coordinator queue, and you do a really good job with that. I also look at the missed queue calls because that's really important that we're capturing as many of those as we can. And we do have a good phone system that bounces the calls around if people are on the phone or not available. So I know that you're one of the few, you carry some of the lowest missed queue calls. And you have some of the highest call volumes. And I'm going to say your average calls a week are in the 800 range right now, which is higher than a lot of people. And you do a really, really good job at the phone queue.
Wow. Yeah, that's, you know, I'm sure that with all the reports you get, it'd be easy to not have to look at them. But it means a lot that you are. You're checking in on everything. So
yeah. Well, this business is not managed by big wins. It's little pennies and nickels that really help us to drive this business and be as profitable as we are.
All right. Let's see. You're acing this so far.
I'm getting lucky.
As coordinators, another report that we get is every day at 4:45 p.m. Do you know what report that is?
That's what's going out tomorrow from Central Dispatch.
Yes, it is. And do you know why that's so important for us to check?
Yes, I do. Because I get the pleasure to manage all the truck drivers in Holt of California. Used to be Gary Runnels, who retired after 25 years on June 9th. And now it's John Young, who's scratching his head and wondering, why did he take this job? And at 4:45, they send out a list from everybody that sent in all the loads they need done ASAP and for the next day. So we need to make sure that piece is ready on the go out line with a tube in it, with a key and a contract, so that it can safely be delivered the next day on time to another happy customer.
I'm pretty sure Dylan just gave you my answer sheet, because that is almost word for word what he said to me yesterday when I was running through these questions with him.
Yeah, Dylan's highly engaged with the go out line. Dylan has helped create a bot to help keep what's in the yard and on rent separate, so we can track lost deals sitting there or customer returned still on contract. So Dylan's highly engaged with units available that are available and on rent that are supposed to be on rent. So yeah, we have a lot of challenges with truck drivers pulling into yards with stuff not on the load line or stuff not in that location or stuff not ready to go. And that really costs our business a lot of money and hurts the morale of the truck drivers as they're trying to do a good job as well.
Having the equipment sitting there ready for them instead of on the ready line or sometimes even still on the shop line from being repaired, it can bog down the process a lot, and one less delivery a day means a lot. So if we can sneak in a few more just by being efficient, means a lot to us as coordinators, because that's one less reservation in the way.
Right.
I could sit here and ask you endless questions about CRS, but I guess as far as for rental coordinators looking to do better, further themselves, and to kind of prepare for a career here at Holt, what type of training is available to rental coordinators to kind of develop further in their current position, as well as what else might be available in the company? Because I know not many people want to directly ask for, you know, further training options. So what can you kind of share with coordinators listening in or people interested in this career?
So we have a few things for the coordinators, and we love career coordinators as well. And a lot of coordinators want to move on into something else. Most often the coordinator's career path has been through sales or into store manager in Cat Rental. Some have gone over to work in Pleasant Grove at times or other divisions.
That's kind of all my formal questions for you. Cause you're very involved. Every time you come by the store, it's always, you know what's going on. So it's really tough to try and find questions to stump you.
No, I'm usually the last to know what's going on, honestly. And what do you think you want to do in the next 4 to 5 years? Where do you want to be?
Honestly, Justin and Dakota were kind of saying is you got to keep your eyes open, because there's so many different avenues here within Holt and even CRS. Like you said, it's kind of the two main things that we're looking at as sales and manager. I'm really just kind of interested in furthering my own skills and moving up where a position becomes available, because I'm always interested to do more. So talking with sales reps, talking with managers, learning more about their position and shadowing them, going on ride-alongs, just always keeping my eyes open and seeing what's out there, because there's so much to this company that you may not interact with on a daily basis, but there's a lot of things happening here. So,
okay. And if there was one thing you wanted Dylan to change in Fruit Ridge, what would that be?
I would love to have just an absolute fleet of equipment out there for me to pull from for my own deals. You know, if he could have just a wheel loader, you know, a couple backhoes just sitting ready for my own deals, that would be very appreciated. But no, honestly, Dylan is an excellent manager. He gives us the tools to succeed on our own, and he's not sitting there watching over our shoulder, because he not only expects us to do well, but he trusts that we will do well because he's given us the tools. So I wouldn't change for Ridge. I'm very glad that I was chosen to go to that store.
Great.
So,
good. Well, you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tune in next time to hear directly from our dealer principal, Ken Monroe and Ryan Beatty, as they come on the show to answer what if statements sent by you. Listen up, folks. We need your help. Ken and Ryan want to hear from you. What ideas do you have for the company or in your role? Attached to this episode and the past 3 micro episodes is a form to type in your what if statements. Take less than a minute to input an anonymous what if statement. For example, you could write, "What if we had a podcast to give us information and unite us as a community?" Which, that is a really good question, and somebody should be writing that down. Here is the important information that you need to know about that. Today, September 28th, 2023, is the last day to submit your statements. If you are listening to this podcast September 29th, 2023, or later, you'll have to get excited to hear what your peers have submitted for episode 4. The last 3 micro episodes, you were asked to vote on your favorite fleet from episode 2. Or I guess what you see having the best survival rate. 3 of our employees were tasked with coming up with a 5 machine fleet to survive on a deserted island. Those machine lists were on the podcast website, and you all had a chance the last month or so to vote on those, and the results are in.
The winner of the 2023 Core Fleet Draft is Mike Davis with his Kubota M6 Loader Backhoe, Cat Excavator 313, Kubota RTV Sidekick, SciTech West, Earthworks, and Land Pride Tandem Disc. Congratulations, Mike, on winning our fleet draft.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and remember to keep building, keep growing, and keep listening to Core. We'll see you next time.